Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very pleased to welcome today Dr. Janet Smith-Sood, who is a senior lecturer within the Department of Clinical Pharmacology and Therapeutics. That's in the Faculty of Medicine and Surgery here at the University. She lectures in pharmacology to BPharm honours students, medical students, and at the Faculty of Health Sciences. Dr. Masood's research activities lie in the areas of pharmacokinetics, drug analysis and drug development, and she has introduced the teaching of epilepsy to several undergraduate courses in Malta. Her present research considers various aspects of the incidence and treatment of epilepsy in Malta in specific populations and the newer anti-epileptic drugs. She's published, obviously, extensively in her area of research on the pharmacokinetics of anti-epileptic drugs and has been invited to attend and chair scientific sessions, of course, at all the major scientific European and world epilepsy conferences in the last decade, really, as well as prestigious pharmacokinetic meetings such as the Pharmacokinetics UK. She's acted as peer expert evaluator within Eurocommission's Commission DG Research for the Framework Programmes 5, 6 and 7 research projects, and is at present COST, National Contact Person, and Malta's representative on the Committee of Scientific Officers for COST. We shall be hearing about COST and what the acronym stands for during the programme. Dr. Masood is National Expert on the Scientific Pharmacogenetics Working Group for the EU European Medicines Agency in London and has been appointed Local Supervisor for PhD students registered at King's College in London, University of Aberdeen and University of Dundee in UK. Between 2004-2009, she was appointed Commissioner of the National Commission for the Promotion of Equality, the NCPE. Chair of the National Contact Point Organisation EU Fifth Framework Programme for Research in Malta between 2000 and 2005, and is a consultant also to the Malta Council for Science and Technology, and also a consultant on EU affairs to several key institutions here in Malta. Former chair of the Gender Issues Committee for University of Malta, and I was happy to be a member on that committee while she was chair, and also as a member of several important local boards and commissions. A founder member and advisor to the Caritas Malta Epilepsy Association since 1995, and has recently been appointed Vice President Europe for the International Bureau for Epilepsy, which perhaps we might be able to fit in a word about at the end of this chat. Welcome.
Thank you, Tricia.
Well, today there were several things, of course, which we could have spoken about,
exactly.
But we've sort of had a little chat about what we might discuss. And since we haven't, I think, ever spoken about COST before on the radio, perhaps you could tell us a little bit. Obviously, this is another of those lovely European acronyms.
Right.
So perhaps you could tell us about the meaning mm-hmm. of COST and about obviously about its aims.
Thanks very much. First of all, thank you for that kind welcome and introduction. It's true, as you said, the EU tends to be inundated with acronyms, and sometimes when you go to meetings, you wonder what this acronym means. Actually, COST is one of the simpler acronyms. It stands for European Cooperation in Science and Technology. And it's actually one of the longest-running European instruments which supports cooperation among scientists and researchers among Europe. It's actually a very simple action to participate in. Malta has been participating in COST actually way back before we became members of the EU. And since I was asked to coordinate the COST action, we saw that there's a lot of advantages for researchers based in Malta participating in COST.
What about the word action? Because, you know, we're used to hearing this word and sort of we've been in on the framework programs. But perhaps a very brief word about sort of how it works,
exactly.
Really.
So, first of all, what's interesting about costs is that costs cost absolutely nothing, neither to the researcher nor to the university or the research institution or whatever institution the researcher belongs to. It's actually funded, it's actually a council framework. It's intergovernmental. So it's actually an agreement between the various governments, both within Europe, and what's interesting is that it's so found to be so interesting that even many non-EU countries are now participating in COST. What happens is that twice a year there's a call for actions, and these actions, unlike in framework programs, which are based on, the calls are based on what we call work programs, that is, what is going to be funded is already decided. In this case, in COST, it's a bottom-up approach. That is, scientists themselves or researchers, and this is all types of researchers, we're not just talking about, you know, the biological sciences, you know, the so-called hard sciences, but even with respect to literature, architecture, environment, linguistics. And what happens is that you need to have at least five researchers from five different countries who decide, look, who want to participate in an action. The website is extremely simple. It's www.cost.eu, or people who want more information, they can easily contact me as well on my email address at university if they want more information. And what happens is that twice a year there's an open call, one in March and one in September. The application form is very simple. What they need to show is that this research is actually innovative, that no, it's something which is completely new. And the actions are in fact organized in what we call a series of domains. There are nine key scientific domains, and there is also one trans domain. As we know now, the interdisciplinary aspect of research is becoming more and more important. We can see this even at university. The nine domains are these. There's one on biomedicine and molecular biosciences. There's another domain which covers food and agriculture. Another one which covers forests. And we also have some interest in that, even though in Malta, as such, our forests are very small. Another domain covers materials, physics, and nanosciences. The fifth domain covers chemistry, molecular sciences, and technologies. We've got the earth system science and environmental management, ICT, that is information communication technologies, transport and urban development, as well as what we call individuals, societies, cultures, and health. So as you can see, these are really all-encompassing, and practically, I think, every researcher based, not only at this university, but based in Malta, can find one or more actions which they would be interested in. Each action lasts for about around 4 years. So once there's a selection process, the actions are selected by what we call domain committees, and since May, we have a representative from Malta on each domain committee. And once they are selected, that action is now open to any researcher. So even if a researcher based in Malta was not part of the original five, or any researcher, for that matter, from any COST country wants to participate, they're willing to add on. All they need to do is look at the action, see what their interest is, apply. There's a simple application form which I can forward to them, just basically just to show that they have interest in that research they've published, and just to show that they can contribute somehow to the action. And then they can be nominated. There's a process, in fact, which goes through the various authorities, eventually to the permanent representative in Brussels, and then that person is nominated and will to council, and Malta can participate in the action.
Why is it that the council has gone for this kind of formula? Because, as you say, the framework programs, the applications are notoriously difficult, whereas this one sounds much more straightforward.
Exactly.
Why should the council have gone for this formula?
Actually, COST has been around, you could say, at the same time as, it's actually far older than FP, than the framework program, and it has been found to be extremely useful. It's actually a networking of research. There is no money for research as such. the funding that there is for the researchers to meet up, to discuss what they're doing in their own individual institutions. And in this way, you're reducing the fragmentation of European research investments. How often do we complain that sometimes, even at this university, we have no idea what, you know, colleagues in a fellow department are doing, or, you know, sometimes even colleagues in our own department are doing. So it's very important to create the synergy and to create this critical mass. And in this way, Europe will hold a strong position in the field of scientific and technical research by increasing this European cooperation and interaction. As I said, the funding, which comes from Council, so the Maltese researcher does not fund anything. They are reimbursed. They don't get the funding for research, but they are reimbursed for the meetings. What's interesting is that not only the meetings of the management committee are funded, but there are also what we call other tools which are funded. For example, what we call short-term scientific missions. It's especially very interesting for young researchers to participate, and we can see that there's been a quite, since I've taken over, well, since I've been asked to take over actually in May, we've had a lot of young researchers wanting to participate in COS, because this is a good jumping board for them. They get to know who's who in the European world of research. And in that way, once, as you know, you tend to work with who you know. And once they get to know who you are, then the people or researchers who are keen to promote and to organize an FP project or some larger project, they say, ah, we need someone from Malta. I know this person or that person. That personal contact would have already been done. So this is a good trampoline for actually young researchers to participate.
And nowadays, getting a PhD, becoming a researcher, is not something that's confined solely to university academics.
Right.
There are now PhDs out there. It wasn't the case in the past, but there are PhDs out there who might be active in industry, for example, who would like to participate, who are not academics, really. Mm-hmm. So they are able to do that as well.
In fact, we just recently had, on the 5th of November, we had our first COST day, which was quite well attended. And we had quite a substantial number of participants from industry. And we had two invited speakers. One is a scientific officer from the COST office in Brussels. The other one who actually did the evaluation for the participation in the German COST actions, Dr. Barbara Good. And both of them recommended that that COST is now actually highlighting the importance of having industry on board, and especially SMEs and emerging small enterprises and these small technologies which are finding their niches even here in Malta. For example, if I had to mention just a few examples of actions in which there are Maltese researchers participating in, you can see actually there is also, even though this is scientific based, there's research, you know, it's going to help to coordinate the research, but actually very practical outcomes. For example, we have Dr. Joe Borch from the from the Department of Biology and the Faculty of Science, who's participating in something called seagrass productivity, from genes to ecosystem management. This is something which is extremely interesting. We know the number of seagrasses which are around the island. We know how important the marine environment is to Malta, not only to our economy, but even to our to substantiate our tourism as well. So it's extremely interesting. We also have, for example, Dr. Adriana Vella as well from the Department of Biology, whereby they're developing a pan-European marine biodiversity observatory system. We know very well the large work Adriana does with dolphins and marine, and this will help her keep in touch with her colleagues across Europe in this area. Another marine, I'll move then over to other areas, would be something which Professor Aldo Drago from the Malta Operational Center on Maritime Affairs is doing. It's called SMOS, Mission Oceanography Data Exploitation. So this as well will help to synergize the research in this area. Towards more practical aspects, we have a large number of researchers who are contributing actually in architecture as well. We talk a lot about sustainable development, about the environment, about, we know about the problems of our traditional building, which might be, for example, not so friendly with respect to energy saving. So we've got, for example, Mr. Dione Bohajar, who's looking at structural glass and novel design methods and next generation products. Dr. Vince Bohajar and Dr. Ruben Borch, who are looking at development in cities as well, both from the Faculty of Built Environment. Within ICT, we have Dr. Adrian Francalanza and Professor Gordon Parch, who are looking at infrastructure for reliable computer systems. I mean, the list is never-ending, even though Malta is one of the smallest countries. We're actually participating right now in about 36 different actions. Just to move to something different, for example, we've got then Ms. Danielle Gatt from the Faculty of Health Sciences, who's looking at language impairment in a multilingual society. So, as you can see, the disciplines are really diverse. We even have Dr. Timmy Gambin looking at submerged prehistoric archaeology. So, I myself have participated in two actions, one to do with gender issues, following my work on NCP, and the other looking at the pharmacokinetics, following my own research. A colleague was looking at diverse models using, instead of using animals, what models can we use to develop new drugs. So, really and truly, I think if you go through the website and you look at some keywords, you'll definitely find something which is of interest to the various researchers.
One of the things I read when I was looking through the blurb to find out something about COSP before this this chat, I came across the word non-competitive research. Is that an oxymoron, or can you have non-competitive research?
Actually, as you know, most research, even research which has eventually helped to revolutionize the way we think, and where researchers have been, you know, the recipients of Nobel Prizes, most of them do start as blue sky research. And nobody ever thought, for example, when the internet started, that it was going to change our life as it did. When we look at the Nobel Prize winners for the last few years, you know, the way they've looked at economics and medicine and health, nobody ever thought that their findings would have some type of practical output. And I think COSP definitely helps to this, you know. People come with ideas, and I think here in Malta we do have a lot of very good, very creative researchers. Perhaps even due to the limitations of our size, sometimes we learn how to work, you know, and I think it's no coincidence that Eduardo Bono actually hails from Malta. You know, we tend to think laterally. We learn how to overcome obstacles using innovative techniques and creative methods. And I think what I find, and when I talk to researchers who are already participating in COSP, they welcome all these researches because we give that added input, that added insight. Perhaps because the fact that we are so small, I mean, at the beginning you were giving my little CV, I've been involved in so many diverse issues. We tend to have quite a wide perspective of our society and what our economy looks for. And our university tends to be very much a university which wants to do outreach and really make an impact on society in general, not only in Malta, but even in Europe and worldwide. And I think this really helps, COSP would really help, you know, researchers to do this, to find their creative output.
And as an officer, really, now, as an organizer of COSP, I mean, when you go abroad, obviously it must take you, I imagine, abroad quite often. What do you actually do? What do you say, I went on a conference, or I went on this, or I had a meeting? You know, what is involved, really, in being involved in on the administrative side, apart from the research side?
So, actually, my work is slightly different from people who are participating in COSP. When you participate in COSP, there are many outputs. And one of the outputs is, of course, publications, which is so important to any academic's career, as we know. So, and there are also conferences which are, which actually could be co-funded with respect to COSP. For example, I was talking to Dr. Ruben Borch last week from the Faculty of Built Environment. They've actually come out already from their COSP action towards the end now, and they've come out with three really interesting publications, and which are already, one of them is already in reprint, it's been requested so much. They've also come out with ideas for new research. You know, they already, once you're in a COSP action, the problem is because they keep asking you to join, and the problem is, you know, which meetings do I go to and which not. And this is why I tell them, you know, do you have any young researchers who would be interested to participate? This is really a good launching pad for them. With respect to my meetings as a COSP representative for Malta, as you said, they tend to be more administrative. We look at the actions which have been funded. We decide on the way forward. We decide on how best to streamline. We always complain. Many researchers complain, but I don't have time to do all this bureaucratic red tape with the EU. And we heard all these complaints about FP and all its funding mechanisms and how complex, and you need an accountant and a full-time manager and team sheets and everything. So, but COS is really very, very simple, and we really want to make sure that any researcher would be able to participate. I mean, as such, the only paperwork which is involved, as I said, is a little application form, which you just fill up and you forward to me. The way it works out is they fill up this small application form. I just want a little brief CV and, you know, some research interests and to show that they are really interested in participating, which I then forward to the MCST board, the Malta Council of Science and Technology board, who I have the mandate to coordinate COST in Malta. Once that's approved, then I move forward, as I said, the request to the Prime Rep in Brussels through the Office of the Prime Minister, who is the research ministry presently in Malta, and then Council signs it. It could take, as with any procedure, it does take a few weeks. It's not going to happen overnight. But we do get it done, and I'm pleased to say in the last month we actually had Malta joining up 8 new actions just in the period of a month. So really want, you know, the target is to really increase it substantially, because there's so much which can be done, and there are so many cost actions in which there's no Maltese participant. So, as I said, even if the action has been, if possible, hasn't been in force for more than a year, because then the procedure would tend to be a bit more cumbersome. But even if it's been in force for more than a year, definitely let me know, and we'll see how we can go about it. I'll forward you the application form, etc. All we want to see is that, of course, at least once a year, you let us know, you know, just a brief one-page report, what you've done, what the outcomes were, just to make sure, as you know, we have to be accountable to the MCST board, just to see that you've benefited from it and what ideas you've had. And I hope to see more and more researchers in Malta actually coordinating cost actions themselves.
Well, it does sound like a wonderful opportunity, and certainly the simplicity of it would be attractive to anybody who has had to fill in one of those FP forms.
Yeah, exactly.
And participate, even not as a coordinator, but just as
a participant.
It's pretty difficult. I think that, you know, we've unfortunately just got a few more minutes left. I really would like to go back to talking about one of your main loves, which is the study of epilepsy. And as I said in the introduction, you've recently been appointed Vice President Europe for the International Bureau for Epilepsy. What can you tell us about that? What's about the ITER, how you got there, and what you will be doing as Vice President?
Yes.
Very briefly, obviously.
Yes, of course. Actually, I was honored to be chosen as Vice President Europe. There's actually the President, which is worldwide, and there's a Vice President for every continent. I think anyone who knows who's been on the organizing committee of any large organization knows it's practically voluntary work, but it does take quite a substantial amount of time. We are trying a lot. There's a lot of activity going on in the epilepsy world. For example, we're going to launch for the first time next year European Epilepsy Day on the 14th of February in Strasbourg at the European Parliament. We're finalizing, and we're coming out right now with the logos and the icons and everything, and we're doing it in conjunction with several MEPs, and even I've contacted some local Maltese MEPs as well who are willing to contribute. 14th of February was chosen because not many people know, but St. Valentine had epilepsy. Well, it's reported that he had epilepsy. We're also doing a lot of work, for example, on driving, for driving regulations for persons with epilepsy in Europe. There was a large diversity. We're looking at what types of medicines are available, about who can be reimbursed for medicines. As you know, even in Europe itself, we're very lucky here in Malta that most persons with chronic diseases are able to get their medicines practically free of charge here, but that's not always the case in Europe, and we're learning from each other. We're looking at the development of new medicines as well, because unfortunately still 30% of persons with epilepsy, and epilepsy is the most common chronic neurological conditions that affects 1% of the population, so here in Malta of about 4,000 people. So we still have quite a few people who are not controlled. It's about 30% of the total. So we do work a lot as well with the pharmaceutical industry. We have a very good relationship, and I've also been appointed on one of the committees looking at, in fact, drug-resistant epilepsy, one of the committees of one of the large pharma industry. There's a lot of research going on. As you mentioned earlier, one of our main interests as well is looking at pharmacogenomics. What causes epilepsy is very often not known. And the way I like to explain it to the students is like a ladder. You have various steps. It could be, okay, as a result of trauma or an accident or fever or meningitis, but there are genetic factors as well. And we'd like to see what cause, you know, what the genetic factors are. I mean, pharmacogenomics is the big thing right now. We do a lot of research in our department in this regard. So there's a lot going on. We do try to help, of course, even our local members of here in Malta. We do a lot of outreach work. For example, only last week we went to speak to the new recruits in the police academy. You know, it's the second time now. We want the police recruits to recognize when a person has had a seizure, what to do, what not to do, that it's different from a person, you know, being having an overdose due to alcohol or drugs. We also do regular talks in schools, and we're talking at one of our top private schools in Malta as well. Over the last week, we do regular service training courses for teachers. I get requests now practically from all the, you've mentioned some faculties I lecture, and I also lecture now, for example, and to social workers about epilepsy and to various other courses and various other students, to psychologists as well. So there's a lot of interest, and I think it's good. Unfortunately, it's not as in, you know, as some other chronic diseases, like, for example, especially in children, like ADHD or dyslexia or something, but it's definitely far more common and there needs to be much more awareness.
In general, in talking in the European and world mode, is there heavy funding for research?
Well, as you know, there's a lot of interest right now, and we do try to work a lot with the, and try to, you know, we talk about FP, we try to lobby very much to make sure that epilepsy was in for FP. The big things right now are, of course, Alzheimer's and other chronic neurological conditions, unfortunately. One big thing we're doing is trying to promote, together with other organizations, the 2013 as being the European Year for the Brain. So we'll see where that leads us. I mean, it's an ongoing work. It's interesting. We work with a lot of people with a common goal. We do it all voluntary, and I think it's very...
Definitely worthwhile.
Very much so.
Well, thank you very, very much,
thank
Dr.
you.
Janet Mifsud, for coming to talk to us today about costs and also about your new position on the National Bureau for Epilepsy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's program. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.